This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
I don't know about you, Bob, but I like that music because that means springtime is here.
I do, too.
Dan Griffin and, of course, Master Gardener Bob Harris here joining us. And thank you so much for coming on in again for this season of The Gardening Show. And
well, thank you for welcoming me.
We are all looking forward to it.
I'm going to talk this week about vegetable gardening because that seems to be a pretty hot topic right now. For a lot of reasons. So I want to give you as many tips as I can on how to get started, especially for new gardeners.
Okay. And then remember, I just wanted to real quick say that we are, of course, always taking phone calls, too.
Yes.
So,
oh, yeah.
368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. It looks like the Facebook Live is working, so you can join us there. And you can send a comment on the Facebook Live or garden@WESB.com. Okay.
All right.
All right. So let's get into it.
Okay. So number one, a suggestion I would make is try to educate yourself as much as possible. And there's a lot of ways to do it now. And there's a lot of new information coming out there. But of course, always the best information is going to be the local information because we have our own particular climate here and our own particular ways of doing things, our own particular soil. So the local knowledge is probably going to be your best bet. And for new gardeners, you know, one of the first things they want to know is what's a reasonable size to start? And that's going to depend a lot on the gardener themselves. It can be as much as just or as little as just one container. And I say container, I don't say pot. Because you can use anything. I use even a wheelbarrow to plant in. You can use any kind of container you can imagine or even build your own. But pots do work well.
You know, and so I'm glad you mentioned new gardeners because I think there are a lot, especially this time.
Yes.
Because everybody wants to get out of the house.
Yeah.
You know, they're all cooped up with this whole COVID thing. And they want to do something, and what's still safe?
Yep.
To be in your yard.
And I think it's great.
Yeah.
I really love it. So that's, if you only have a small amount of space, that would be my hint there, a container garden. Now, as much sun as possible, though, is going to be important. All vegetable gardeners are going to want to be in full sun. That's going to mean at least 6 hours a day.
I was just going to ask that. That was my next question. Full sun, does that mean like for the whole day, at least 6 hours?
At least 6 hours.
Okay.
You can be successful with a little less, but be aware that you're not going to have the biggest tomato plant in Bradford, but you're still going to be successful even with a little less, but at least 4 hours of sunshine. So now another one would be in the size for a new gardener. I would say if you want to do beds rather than just a small container, do them a 4 by 8 foot bed. That works well. 4 by 8 foot because lumber comes in that dimension, so it makes it easy.
What's the magic number? That's what lumber comes in. Oh.
And because it's easy to reach across a 4 foot wide bed. So, that would be my suggestion there, a 4 foot by 8 foot. And if you're really going to do it, do two of them because they're always going to find a time when you have to rotate your crops. If you have just one bed, it's pretty hard to rotate that way. So if you have 2 4 by 8 foot beds, it's easy to rotate. You can plant your tomatoes in bed A the first year and then bed B the next year. So you're always rotating. And that can be pretty doggone important. A lot of diseases, funguses, insects can start to come into your garden. Don't be alarmed, and they can make a home there. So by rotating, you really make it tough for them to set up a big population.
Oh, okay. Wow, that's very interesting. So what would you suggest? Just anything other than tomatoes? You want to rotate tomatoes 1 year and onions the other year? I don't know. What is?
Yeah, you usually go by the family, and in the tomato family, there's a lot of plants. It's tomato. They're all related, close related, tomato, pepper, eggplant, all those are related. So those you want to plant in bed A the first year and those into bed B the next year. To change it now, I like squash, so I'll mention that one. So that if you did tomatoes in bed A this year, do your squash and cucumbers in that bed next year.
Okay. So it doesn't work with if you use the same family, like you said.
Yeah, it doesn't really.
Still too close.
Besides, in the tomato family, it's tomato, peppers, eggplant, potatoes also. They're all close related and all attract the same diseases and insects and problems. So it's a good idea for that group to be rotated. And in those 4x8s, you know, you can have quite a selection of plant material because that is a good size. If you can't do a 2 4x8s, 1 4x8 will do well. Remember, plant your tomatoes and like plants at one end of it this year and then the other end the next year. So you're always rotating. So that kind of covers what size you can start with. So anywhere from one container on up to beds. I guess I should continue. I like raised beds because it solves a lot of problems that we do have here in Bradford. We have a clay soil, most of us.
Oh, yeah.
There are areas that don't, that have real good garden soil, but most of us have a clay soil or a rocky soil or shale soil.
Very rocky on my yard. Oh, yeah. It's like half cement block, I think.
Same here.
Yeah.
So a raised bed makes sense. You can build that bed and then bring in soil and add a lot of amendments to it. I'm going to suggest that if you're just starting out, when you bring that soil in, 1/3 of that volume should be mixed with another material like peat moss, compost, manure, any one of those products, or all of them combined, but at least 1/3 of it for that first year. To break up all that clay and maybe sandy loam that you've gotten to really nourish that soil, because that's really going to be the success or failure of your garden, the soil is.
Yeah.
So spend plenty of time taking care of that first.
How many inches do you need of like the good? Can you put like kind of worse soil on the bottom and then only put like good soil on the top? The whole thing has to be.
You should try to mix it. You can get away that way because nature is going to mix it over time, but it does take some time. It takes years for that compost to get down in and enrich the poorer soil. So it's a good idea really to mix it all 10 to 12 inches deep if you can. Let's say you're going to build a raised bed and you don't really have to dig the sod out. You can put the raised bed, build it right there in place. And then that maybe some newspaper down over that grass so it can't continue to grow up through your soil. Then put soil on top of it. Don't use landscape fabric. Use newspaper because that's going to rot away in a hurry. Now, that newspaper, again, will rot away within a year or two. And so you'll have nice deep soil. But for that first year, it protects you from any of those weeds or grass that you had there from coming up and getting in the way of your garden. So the newspaper, the soil, and then try to mix in your amendments, they're called, like peat moss, compost, anything, old leaves, anything you can find that's organic to mix in there. And the more the better, at least 1/3 by volume. So then another question you'll probably get is, when do I plant? And now that's going to be, for me, it's a long range. Starting around the end of May and ending around the beginning of July. You have all that time in between to plant your garden. The old way was you don't plant till the 1st of June. And then by the middle of June, it's all over. That's not true. Sometimes we've had years where you can start at the end of May and the weather is fine. Keep track of the weather. You got to become your own weatherman, too, when you're a gardener. So keep track of that. When all threat of frost is over, it's time to plant. But you can still plant up to July 4th, and probably people have heard me say this on the show before. Some of my best gardens that I procrastinated about, I didn't plant till July 4th, were my best garden.
July 4th, well, of course, it's the patriotic garden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you have all that time. Now, getting into mid-July, it's going to be hard to get a plant. It's kind of late to start a seed, so your chances are real slim there. Now you can do real quick things like lettuce and carrots and radishes, so on, that are real quick, we call them, that you can even do them in the first of August even. plant them. So don't think it's over just because June has come and gone. It's not over. You've got plenty of time.
Okay.
But don't waste time, too.
Don't procrastinate yeah. like me, because I've been planting onions for like 8 years. Still haven't got one.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm glad to see you keep trying. Yeah. 8 years. You know, that's another.
I keep trying to go to the store to get the bulbs or whatever.
Oh. That's another thing I wanted to talk about. You will fail, and even after 50 years of gardening, I still fail from time to time. But don't let it get to you. Keep going like Dan does, 8 years of trying. You will become successful eventually. Not all of us are lucky enough to go out there and put our first plant in the ground and be successful. Sometimes we are, but not always. But don't let it get you down. Fight through it, and next year is always a better time.
One thing that we did put in there that we have a little bit of success with is the daffodils.
Daffodils? Okay.
They're alive. They're growing well. I think I got maybe two of them that blossomed a couple weeks yeah. ago, and then they went away.
Oh.
I still have the green, you know, stems or the leaves yeah. from them.
So. Yeah, and leave those leaves until they turn brown.
Okay.
Because they're going to feed the bulb for next year. Daffodils are one of the toughest plants on earth. You normally can just dig a hole 4 to 6 inches deep, drop them in, cover it up,
well, no wonder
and you're done.
No wonder they're alive on my property.
All the bulbs are like that. They're just so tough and so forgiving. The steps you should take now is to prepare that soil and the bed and the place. Make sure you get as much sun as possible. Another thing to think about, though, before you start is how convenient is it going to be to water? That's going to be one of the biggest projects you have is watering it, if we hit hot, dry periods. So get the garden as close and as sunny a spot and as close to water as you can get it. It makes it a lot easier on yourself, and you'll be more apt to take care of it that way. So close to where you are as you possibly can get.
See, I'm so afraid of, because my yard has a lot of, it's really wet, so I have moss and stuff.
Okay.
I'm always worried about overwatering now because of that. So, you know, that's one thing that I'm always, okay, am I drowning this plant? Am I, you know, so what's kind of, how do I know it's enough water or too much?
Yeah, and that's a common mistake, and one of the biggest failures to any plant, whether it's in a garden or a pot, is overwatering. We all tend to think, well, I got to water every day. That's not necessarily true, especially here in Bradford. We get that inch of rain every week. It's usually very dependable, and most plants can survive and thrive on just that inch a week. So what was your question?
No, just because I'm worried about overwatering all the time.
Oh, yeah.
So it's like, okay, well, do I give it water today or not? So what's the, if the soil is wet or if, I mean, is that like a guarantee test? If you just touch it and it's wet, then you leave it alone or what?
That is a guarantee.
Oh, okay.
But for those that just want to give it a quick look, I give you one little hint, an indicator plant. Get flowering impatient. That's an annual impatient. And now that they're usually grown just in the shade, but you can grow them in the sun. Plant a few of those. You're going to want some flowering plants in your vegetable garden anyhow. So plant a few of those or something like that in your vegetable garden. If you see it wilting, then probably your whole garden needs watered. If it's not wilting, because they'll be the first to wilt if it's dry. If it's not wilting, don't water because, again, one of the biggest mistakes all gardeners make is overwatering. And what you do is by overwatering, you take up all the air space in the soil. And I've probably said this 1,000 times, plants need air as much as they need water. So a soggy soil is going to be death to a plant.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So plant some indicator plants.
I like that. It's kind of like a bird in the coal mine, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Just like that. So plant that indicator plant. You know, and that works well, too. If you're going to plant a new shrub or a new tree, maybe plant an indicator plant right with it. And when you come home or look out your window every day, if that plant is wilting, maybe it's time to water that new tree or shrub you planted or your vegetable garden. If it's not wilted, maybe it's time to leave it alone. And when you do water, this is important. A lot of people like to water the plant. You don't water the plant, you water the bed. If you just put, especially when we get into July and August, when it can get hot and dry in a hurry, if you just water the plant and the soil is dry, a lot of that water is going to be wicked away from the plant towards the dry soil. So it is not available to that plant. If you water the whole bed is damp. You don't want to do it till it's soaking wet. Soaking wet once in a great while is okay, but not not every time you water. So you want to wet the whole bed so that the water doesn't get wicked away and the plant roots can this is important too.
Go ahead.
The plant roots. If you water every day, make water available to that plant, it has no reason to grow more roots. Once in a while, you got to let that garden dry out so that it can, it will build roots searching for that water that's hard to come by. The bigger the root system, the better the plant. So that's important. That's another reason why not to water every day.
Wow. That's a great, great helpful tips from the master gardener himself, Bob Harris. I just like boys and girls. Remember, Bob says it's okay to wet your bed. All right. 368-WESB, 814-368-9372.
Oh, girl.
Get your questions to Bob, and we are on Facebook Live as well. Jimmy says hello and welcome, Bob.
Hi,
welcome
Jimmy.
Back. So, yeah, get your questions in there. We'll be right back with The Gardening Show on B107.5.
Give your lawn a healthy head start with a visit to Worth W. Smith Company Hardware. You'll find varieties of grass seeds for every use, plus 10-10-10 fertilizers, mulches, and limes. And don't forget the seed spreaders, handheld sizes for the small jobs, and push models for the bigger ones. You'll also find a nice selection of garden seeds, patio blocks, and railroad ties. Ready for a new mower? See Worth Smith for a great deal on a new Toro mower. If you need it for spring, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
And welcome back to The Gardening Show on WESB. Bob, thank you so much for coming in again another season.
Oh, you're welcome.
This is great. I'm having fun today. We're learning. And what else is on your hit list there, your checklist? Of
yeah.
Different tips.
So we've wet the bed.
Yes.
And we got everything the bed prepared. We got everything planted. And now we're ready to continue on. And this is another topic that really gets me, is fertilizing. Now, there's three different ways to fertilize. There's the dry fertilizer. That's usually little granules that you sprinkle around. And as it you water or it rains, a little bit of that dissolves and becomes available to the plant roots. Then there's the liquid fertilizer, which is usually the blue or green powder. You put in your water and can mix it up. And when you water your plant, that food becomes available to your plant. And then there's compost. Usually compost is full of all the nutrients a plant will need. And so if you put down a layer, like mulching your garden, a layer of compost, you fed it for the whole season. So the dry fertilizer, that's going to be, you're going to have to do that maybe once a month, maybe only once a season.
Can you harm a plant by over?
Yes. Yeah. And okay. I'll get into that. You
okay,
can
great.
Very,
okay.
very quickly. The liquid fertilizer, normally that's about once a week. And then compost is once a year. So those are the key numbers you want to go by.
When you say compost, is that like mulch or that's a little different?
Compost is a mixture. You know, you've made old leaves, grass clippings, okay. Your kitchen scraps and so on that you've made compost. Mm. Or you can buy even in a bag compost. That's a real good black material, which you should be adding to your garden every year anyhow, some way or another. So can you over-fertilize? Yes. And a lot of people learn that with their vegetable plants. A tomato is a real pig in the garden. It'll eat everything it can. So if you fertilize a lot, it's going to eat a lot, which forces it to grow a lot and not produce fruit. Most of your vegetable plants need to go under a little bit of a stress period. They gotta go hungry and thirsty once in a while, and
so they appreciate their food.
Yeah,
right.
So they are forced, and all plants are like that, forced to flower and produce fruit and seed. If they're fat and happy, fed all the time, watered all the time, they're gonna think, well, I don't have to produce a flower yet. I'll wait till lean times. So be aware of that. Don't over-fertilize. Having that the biggest tomato plant on the street is pretty neat to have, but it doesn't always produce real well. And when it does produce, sometimes it produces too many, and they're not big and they're not nutritious. Keep them lean and mean there in the bed. Force them to really search those roots out, looking for food and water, and then it'll force them into flower, force them into making big, ripe fruits, especially the ripening. If we keep fertilizing, a lot of plants will have a rough time ripening because of the fertilizer. Mm. They just keep growing and growing and don't see a need to ripen to produce that seed. So keep them real hungry, especially after they set fruit. Then you really want to stop the fertilizer for a while. That'll help them to initiate their ripening period.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that's clear there. That can be complicated. And I know a lot of people, you know, geez, you got to baby your plants. You got to go out there and water them every day and fertilize them every day. That can be a big mistake. So try to hold back on that.
And remember, we're going to be here every Saturday morning for the whole season. So
oh, yeah.
We'll help you along the way. So don't be afraid to try that new project.
You bet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's your choice whether you want to do the dry fertilizer, sprinkling it on your bed and letting nature take its course, or do the liquid.
Do you change it up, or what do you personally do now? What have you found?
I kind of do both. I'll start out with the dry, but once in a while, a plant, you can see the leaves aren't quite as green as they should be. The plant's not growing like it should be. Needs a little boost, so then I'll give it a little liquid fertilizer in that particular area.
Okay.
But every year I'll add a little bit of compost too. But I've been gardening in the same bed for about 40 years. So my soil gets a little depleted, even no matter how much compost I add to it. It's a little depleted of all its nutrients. So I do have to supplement the plant's diet with a little fertilizer, but not too much. I've had fun growing those great big, tall, monstrous tomato plants, but, that hungry, kind of short one. The tomato plant shouldn't be more than about waist high when it's grown well. The cherry tomatoes, they'll get a little taller. They might get 6 foot tall. But a regular, you know, the beefsteaks and so on, the Romas, they get a little bit around waist high. That's a good height. If you start getting taller, you're probably overfeeding that plant. So knock it off a little bit.
All right. Yeah, settle down. Calm down. It'll be fine.
Another key thing, though, about fertilizing, if you are using that liquid fertilizer, that one you mix up in your watering can, the blue or green crystals, if it rains a lot, that washes that fertilizer away quite quickly.
Right.
Now, the dry fertilizer is there for a long, long time, usually 2 to 3 months. But the liquid can get washed away. I have nothing against that, you know. It's not expensive.
Well, you just have to pay attention to the forecast.
Yeah, like so if we had a lot of rains that week when you had just fertilized, be prepared to fertilize again.
Because it all washed away.
Yeah.
Phone lines are open. We have about 5 minutes left in the show. 368-WESB. That's 814-368-9372. We're on Facebook Live, and we are on the email. So you can email a question for Bob or a picture at garden@WESB.com. That's garden@WESB.com. And Ann Holiday is watching from home on Facebook Live. She says, after all these years, I never thought of that joke. The wet your bed.
Wet your bed, yeah. Hi, Ann.
Oh, Jimmy says, we have limited sunlight due to the surrounding tree line. How many hours of sunlight do my sunflowers need to survive?
Again, as much as possible. They're going to need 6+ hours.
Yeah. Okay. So the sunflowers are, well, they live up to their name, right?
Yeah.
They need sure that sun. So you're going to have a challenge there if you're not getting at least six.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, yeah, if they don't have the six, you know, be prepared for kind of dwarfed and small flowered sunflowers.
But you'll still get a little color, though.
Yeah,
at least.
You still
there just
get
won't
it.
Be those ginormous ones that you see.
That's all.
Okay.
Another thing I wanted to talk about, number one, I'm part of the Master Gardener Club, and there's a lot of us now in McKean County, and we do have a hotline. You can email us questions. So I'll give you that link. Oh. It's mggardenhotline.net. If you just search that out, you'll be able to get a hold of us, and we can answer just about any question, combining all of us together, that's possible.
If you don't want to wait till Saturday at 8:30, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's that one more time so people can write that down?
mggardenhotline.net.
Okay, cool.
I hope I got that right.
Well, how many master gardeners are in this club?
Oh, gosh. I think there's about 20 here in McKean County.
No kidding.
But then throughout the state, there's hundreds and hundreds of them.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
So they're very familiar with this climate.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
But if I got a few minutes.
You got three.
Okay. One other thing I wanted to mention about, you know, when you're planting those plants, I want you to think about you're traveling around the world. The tomato plant is from Central America. Mm. The potato and the corn are all from South America. The asparagus you planted is from the Mediterranean and Western Asia. Eggplants from Asia. Broccoli's from the Mediterranean. Lettuce is from Eurasia, Russia, and Turkey. The squash is from North and South America. I have a real interest in squash. I've even got to see the true wild squash growing out in the deserts of squash likes it dry, so be careful with your water in there. That's why they normally suggest you plant squash on a hill
where
it drains a little better. But I've got to see that out in the desert, the wild ones. They're called pebble squash, and it's always been a mystery of, you know, most plants produce a fruit, so animals will eat it, carry the seeds away, and deposit it. But the squash has the original pebble squash has such a hard, hard rind that no animal living today can open it up.
Really?
It's a survivor of ancient times that only the mastodon could crush it open.
I was going to say, tell that to the bear that chewed our transmission line last.
Oh, geez.
Yeah, I think we have a call coming in. We have like limited time here, so let's go to the phones and see what we have here.
Tom, welcome you back for another year.
Oh,
thank you.
But I have one comment for you.
Yes.
When I was showing people how to do those raised bed 4x8 box things,
yes,
they always seem to try to put more plants in there than the area would cover. You have to, you know, regulate the number of plants that you put in them boxes. But thanks for coming back, and I'll be spending the summer listening to you.
All right.
We appreciate that. Thank you so much for the call.
Bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
There's part of that local advice that I talked about, how key it is. Yeah, a lot of people try to crowd their garden.
Mm.
And at one time, you know, the square foot gardening was real popular. And that can be done. But if you do give your plant the space that it's supposed to have, and if you look on the seed packs or the plant tag when you buy the plant, it'll tell you the spacing that you need to keep the next plant away from, you'll be a little more successful, especially like, again, the tomato plant. I talk about that one because that's the most popular garden plant. It can really spread its roots out quite a ways, and it needs to produce all that fruit that you're going to eat. Think about that spacing.
We're out of time, Bob.
Oh, all
right.
Can
you imagine that?
I got more to say, though.
Well, it's a good thing you're coming back next week.
Okay.
And you know what? We're going to do a little bit of an after show as well because we have a couple questions on Facebook Live.
All right.
So if you want to hear a little bit more, hop on Facebook.com/WESB1075, and we'll just talk for a couple more minutes and answer some questions that we had there on the Facebook Live, and we'll talk to you next week. Thank you so much for listening to The Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris on WESB, brought to you by Worth W. Smith Hardware. Okay, Dan Robinson, what plants grow best in a rather damp yard? Well, I guess that depends on how much sun you're getting, right?
Yeah, Ken. Yeah, very much so. Again, I'm going to talk about that local advice. We have the benefit of Graham's Greenhouse here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very knowledgeable people. You can take a stop down there, tell them your question. They can lead you to many, many plants that are going to grow. You're not limited by one plant. There's many plants that are going to grow there, you know, off the top of my head, you know. The dogwood shrub is a good one. Rain gardens are real popular right now, so they're all planted in the wet. There are several types of flowering viburnums that are going to be great there. A lot of the grasses, ornamental grasses, are going to be great there. There are many, many plants. But if you stop down at the greenhouse, tell them your, I won't say problem, tell them your situation, and they can help you out. Or go to that Master Gardener hotline, and you'll get more information than you really want.
So you hear that, Dan? You can grow moss, like me, in your damp yard, tall grass. Dan Case, we have a couple Dans, so that was Dan Robinson. Dan Case says he's listening from Kentucky.
All right.
Originally from Olean, enjoying the show. So thank you so much for tuning in.
You bet. Thanks.
Awesome. All right. I think that's going to about do it here. Of course, you'll be back next week.
Yep.
I don't know if it'll be me or Ann or both or I don't know. We'll have just a gardening party, whoever it is. And remember to get your questions. We have the email garden@wesb.com if you want to get it on the show. And of course, we always open up the phone lines.
You bet.
Try to call before 9 o'clock and then next week. All right, guys. Thank you so much for watching on Facebook Live. We'll see you.